Hi everyone, welcome to 21st Century Saints, our podcast and live stream series for those who are interested in Latter-day Saint Mormonism, General Restoration Mormonism, if you have left this whole crazy space, if you have encountered it, or if you just like hanging with us. Welcome, this is our podcast just for you. We have such a great community, and I always love to hear what you guys are thinking. So I'm hoping that you're going to make good use of the chat tonight, because we have, I'm really excited about our guests tonight. We have the amazing Andrew Bolton, and we have the wonderful Ryan Commons. Now, I've only met Ryan at Sunstone when you did a fantastic presentation. But tonight we're all here to talk about the subject of peace. So before we get into it, if it's okay, I'm going to get you guys to do a little bit of a bio. Ryan, we'll start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are, what your background is, and what your interest in this Mormon space, how you get here?
Sure, yeah, I'd be happy to. So I grew up in the LDS church from, well, my family background was LDS. When I was born, we weren't particularly active, but from when I was about six onwards, we were. I was I enjoyed my time in the church. I gained a lot from it, had a lot of good experiences. I decided to leave when I was 19 or 20, and it was shortly after beginning my undergraduate degree. Around that time I met Community of Christ for the first time, and spent a bit of time there. I decided that I didn't feel called to membership in Community of Christ, but since that time I've always sort of considered myself a friend. I'm very glad that Community of Christ exists, and I've collaborated on several different projects, including the one that we're here to talk about tonight, the 2024 Peace Colloquy.
I am excited to get into it. And what I find quite comical is that often when you are hanging around with any religious group, the assumption is that you're going to formally affiliate with them. And quite often when you actively choose not to, they stop liking you quite so much. And that's not the case here, right? We, you know, Andrew's, you like Ryan.
Of course.
Yeah.
I want to be like Ryan when I grow up.
Fill the audience in with your background, Andrew.
So I should mention, Ryan is too modest to say this, but he did a degree in theology and religious studies at Cambridge, and he's doing a PhD now. But he went to a comprehensive. So
right, yeah.
So that's a little, but Ryan would be too modest to say that, but I can say it for him.
He's a very cool guy. Absolutely.
Yeah. I grew up Roman Catholic in Lancashire, 70 miles south of the border, Jane. So I was an altar boy, went to Catholic primary school. My mum was the Protestant in the family, had become Catholic to marry my dad, but was always suspicious of the Catholic Church. She was more democratic, I think. So I came across the LDS Church when I was working in Oregon on a lily farm. It was a very fine person on the lily farm who turned out to be Mormon. And she only shared she was Mormon after 8 weeks. And I was at that time looking for something better than Catholicism. And I read Joseph Smith's testimony. I had not occurred to me that I should ask God for his opinion on where I should go. So Joseph Smith's testimony spoke to me. Fast forward, I should say that my dad struggled with his experience of being a World War II soldier for 7 years. And we can say more about that later on. So that, I guess when I worked out that the pain in our family came from his wartime experiences. That's when I became seriously interested in peace. I was 16 at the time. So I'm married to Jewel, who's an American. We've been married 47 years. We met in the Community of Christ Church in Llanelli. We have two boys and two grandchildren. So that's enough about me.
And you are very well loved, not just in Community of Christ, but throughout the, anyone who knows Andrew loves him. He's very well respected, and peace has become, it's your mission. It's been your focus for a long time in your faith tradition, but for you personally, is that right?
Yes, yes.
Could you talk a little bit about what that's looked like?
So I used to play war games with my three brothers. We machine gunned each other regularly. But then when I was 16, I heard Dad processing a conversation with his doctor, with my mum. And Dr. Lord had been killed in the D-Day landing, not killed, injured in the D-Day landings. And he understood my dad. And so I understood then that the pain in our home when I was growing up came from his wartime experiences. And then that war was no longer romantic or fun or a game. It was something really quite evil. So I wanted to, first of all, feed the world. So we came from an agricultural background. I went to university to study horticulture. I eventually became a teacher and then an RE teacher, religious education teacher. And I think I did a lot of good as a religious education teacher, helping children think about war and peace, poverty, crime, God. Kids love discussing controversial issues. They hate being preached to.
Right.
But Ryan knows all about being an RE teacher as well.
Yeah, you've done some teaching. That was what you were speaking about in Sunstone, right? You were speaking about this crazy space. To how do you even begin to teach this, right?
Yeah. So after I finished my undergraduate degree, I did a PGCE and worked for a couple of years as a secondary school RE teacher, and I would echo everything that Andrew said about it. It's a wonderful job to do. You get to have so many really wonderful conversations, and children are thoughtful and open-minded, and it's wonderful to be able to present them with ideas and see them kind of consider them sort of for the first time, and getting them to think deeply about things that they maybe haven't before. And there's, yeah, really few things in my life that I found as rewarding as that. So
because the kids are definitely, especially at the, you know, at very young ages, they are ready for the big conversations, you know, about those big weighty subjects. And one of the things that I had really wanted to speak about tonight, or to ask you guys about, sort of, you know, where you sit with this, is our understanding sometimes of those big ideas which have been presented to us, often by faith traditions. This is what it looks like. This is what peace should look like, or love, or happiness. It's presented to you. And often we don't get to discover what that really is for ourselves. So often our assumption when we're talking about peace is that we're all talking about the same thing. When we're talking about peace, what has been, I think, given to me is that peace is something to be achieved, something that I can experience if I've done everything right. So peace is about me being very, very good, I suppose, and that me being very, very good may affect other people, and that feeling of peace may infiltrate through communities and throughout the world. Would you like to, it's not enough. That is, you know, I've sort of rejected that. So would you talk to me about what is peace? What is peace really?
I can start with some initial thoughts. I don't think there's easy or simple definitions. I think it's, for me, it's easier to identify definitions which are not adequate. So as you were saying, the idea that peace is something that you can sort of just achieve by yourself by being really good, I think doesn't quite capture it. Similarly, though, I think simply the absence of violence is not something that captures it. For me, I think if I were to give it my best shot, I think of peace as a kind of security, but it's a security that arises out of friendship and out of harmony with others, rather than out of violence or out of the fear of violence. So it's a freedom from fear that is built positively, and it's not built by individuals. It's built in communities and as communities. That there's a quote that's often sort of repeated, is that there is no way to peace. Peace is the way. I think it's both. It's a goal and ideal to sort of strive for, there has to be a consistency between what you're trying to achieve and the way that you try to achieve it. So if what we're working towards is harmonious coexistence, freedom from fear, then the way in which we work towards that has to embody the ideals that we're working towards.
Right. Andrew, what do you think, and what is when you're talking about peace and its pursuit, what are you talking about when you mean that, when you say that? What is it to you?
So I think peace, the English word peace, is a bit pathetic. So it's inadequate. So I think heiwa in Japanese, or pinyin in Chinese, talks about equal mouth is one character and harmony is the other. So there's a kind of peace and justice thing. Everybody can have food enough, and there's harmony. Shalom is this wonderful word in Hebrew that is a much more bigger peace. It includes prosperity, includes harmony, and other good things. I think it's the presence of justice. So I think shalom peace is really helpful. We're working, some of us are working Community Christ with 8 dimensions to peace, beginning with personal peace, the end of poverty, learning about peace, working with others for peace, addressing earth stewardship and climate change, green peace, and so on. So peace is much more comprehensive. I think there is one word in the Latter-day Saint tradition that's really good. It's the word Zion. Only 4 letters, and in Zion everything is right. The Lord called his people Zion because they're one heart and one mind, so they're reconciling, and dwelt in righteousness, live together justly, and there's no poverty, there's no poor among them. So Zion is really good for me to understand peace.
Now, what I think is, I wonder about people looking into this space, because one of the first times I met you, Andrew, you were presenting about Kirtland and what had happened with Joseph Smith in Kirtland, and you presented with, you know, while I love church history, I hadn't seen it through the eyes of peace and justice. And someone who is presenting me with a militaristic church, and really sort of leaned into what the history looked like, what it would have been like to experience Kirtland then, when the church is, you know, in a lot of ways functioning also as an army. How do Latter-day Saints and community, how does a faith tradition which grows out of those kind of roots have any authority to talk about peace. So you take us back to the sort of the Joseph Smith roots of what was happening in Kirtland to right now. How do we get to here?
So I think I was talking really about Nauvoo.
Nauvoo, yes.
But it was in Glasgow. So it was when we first met, 2018. So we have an army of 5,000 men. There's a lot of unpeace. Joseph has so much power and is being hassled by people from Missouri trying to arrest him. He's under a great deal of stress. You have maybe 10, 12,000 people gathering there. One in three is British. They speak like Ryan and me. So it's an international city. So there's some wonderful things happening in Nauvoo, and there's some very suspect things, including polygamy, beginning there. So I like to say we're a repentant peace church.
Mm.
And Joseph Smith III, the son of Joseph, takes us in a peace direction. He's critical of Nauvoo. He's critical of his dad's militarism. He's seen what violence did to his family. Saw his dead uncle and his dead dad. He doesn't have illusions about violence. So he, in response to that, like I'm in responding to my dad's soldier experience, he takes us in this wonderful peace direction. Bit by bit, he invents the church seal with two others, which has a lion and a lamb and a little child leading them. He forgives Thomas Sharp, who could have been involved in his dad's assassination. He says peace is eminently our mission. So he takes us on this peace direction. And I'm very grateful for it. And that's continued with ups and downs in the reorganization Community of Christ story. It's on the up at the moment.
Ryan, if you can maybe weigh in on this too, because we are presented, I think, particularly as we come into sort of the early 20th century, we are restoration movements are sort of seem to be trying quite actively to be patriotic, to make it really clear we are part of we're part of a community, we're part of a nation. And part of the expectations around that were military service. So often leaders were encouraging members to be participating in military service. I'm just, I guess, wondering, about the story of getting from there to there. Do we get to speak about this when, those things were being preached over the pulpit? People would come to Nauvoo to watch the military parade, and it was something we took a lot of pride in. And so when we take a lot of pride, and that becomes national pride, and then your faith is wrapped up in that. And I think it still is in a lot of ways today. I guess that's sort of what I'm getting at. So talk to us about what that looks like in that journey of World War One, World War Two, where we've been actively encouraged to show what kind of people we are.
So I think both World War One and World War Two are crisis points in the sense of moments that require very difficult decisions for lots of people and for people of faith in particular. And you see that in I think in the mainstream LDS church, and you also see it in Community of Christ. Andrew may be able to say more about some of the specifics of what the Community of Christ response was there, but I believe in both of the main expressions of the Restoration movement at that time, there's a variety of responses that are generated. In the LDS church, there's certainly, as you're saying, a sort of patriotic identification with, in particular, the aims of the US and its foreign policy, which leads to a lot of implicit or tacit, sometimes explicit support for military involvement. And in Community of Christ, also, I think the situation is not straightforward. You have some who are supportive of military action and believe that there's a Christian duty to take part in those conflicts, and also others who are conscientious objectors and who believe that their faith requires them not to take part. I think one thing I would say in general, when reflecting on the sort of history of the Restoration Movement in its attitudes towards violence, is on the one hand, we have to start with the realistic recognition that there is a lot of violence in its history. But at the same time, that doesn't have to be something that we take forward. I think it's, you know, every generation has the prerogative and the responsibility to engage with where we've been and where we've come from, and to think about it critically and to see what the fruits of it have been, and to decide which parts of it are valuable and worth keeping and which parts we need to repent from, as Andrew said.
I love the idea of, I feel like I have for a lot of my life been denied the idea of the justice part of peace, the fact that I may have a right to work towards that or to expect it. Sarah asked me if Sarah, who's on holiday somewhere wonderful again, living her very best adventurous life, but she did ask me if I would present this as a question. As we think about that journey from, you know, a very tumultuous period of time, Mormonism fights its way out of chaos, to today, talk to us a little bit about peace and equality. Do we have to give things up for peace? Sometimes we're sort of, people who are seeking equality are told that they have, you know, that there are things that they are going to have to sacrifice for some kind of greater good, or that this is what God would expect from you, as, you know, perhaps to not be who you are or to dampen down aspects of your character. Talk to me a little bit about peace and equality, if you can.
So I can start. So love your neighbor as yourself, said Jesus. That's about equality. We have the idea that the worth of souls is great in the sight of God, all souls. In the Book of Mormon and Jacob, it says one being is as precious in God's sight as another. In section 49 of both our Doctrine and Covenants, it talks about it's not right that one man should have that which is above another. So there's a kind of radical theme of equality in the Bible and in early Restoration Scripture. And we should look at Jesus. We've not talked much about Jesus so far. I mean, Jesus, for us in Community of Christ, is God become human. And God's given up all this stuff and was born in a stable. So God models for us not being attached to things, even though God's created all this real estate called the universe. So the commandment, do not covet, of the Ten Commandments, do not covet is the sin that gets us into all this trouble. We start competing with each other. We want the same. The Latter-day Saint idea of stewardship is God is owner and we're merely trustees or managers. Means that all this stuff is not ours anyway. It's intended to bless all human beings. So I love the sense of equality in early Latter-day Saintism. It's absolutely glorious, wonderful, and we can take it back to Jesus. Love your neighbor as yourself is about human equality. And there's nothing better in my mind, than fellowship with others where you feel equal to everybody. No one's beholden, no one's subservient. That's really wonderful community. So it's not so, but I have to give up some of my ego to live with others. And I'm practiced at that, although I still struggle because I had three brothers who demanded their share. But Ryan will be wiser than me, I'm sure.
Ryan, what are you thinking?
I definitely echo everything that Andrew's just said. I think for me, unequal peace is not really peace. I think it comes back to the question that we sort of started with of how, you know, how do we define this concept? Because if we think of peace as a kind of way of being together, a kind of way of coexisting with others, that's based on friendship and a respect for their dignity, rather than on coercion, then I think inequality is completely incompatible with that. Even if it may result in a sort of just because the status quo isn't changing doesn't mean that things are peaceful, I think is what I'm trying to articulate. Stability is not always peace. Peace in the way that I understand it, and the way that I think Andrew's articulated as well, similarly, is equality is a fundamental part of that. And equality implies justice.
I love that. And what I'd like to do now is take us to Community of Christ's mission of peace and what its traditions have been around that and how those have evolved. And as we move into this, what I've been thinking about is one thing that Community of Christ does very, very well is presents us with some incredible images. It gives me a lot to think about. And one of the things I've been thinking about as you guys were discussing that was quite a while back, I had read a fantastic article called God Wrestling. And I, at the moment, can't remember who wrote it. I will stick it in the show notes so you can take a look. But the idea of two athletes, and there is no conflict there, but there is a wrestle, there is a sort of sportsmanship, matter of growth, matter of learning, whatever that might look like. I'm aware that we may have some audio problems tonight. I can just apologize to our audience if there's a little bit of feedback here. We will try and fix that in post. But for the moment, anyway, this idea of God wrestling, and it was written by someone who had been a professional wrestler. And he talked about Jacob's wrestling with God. And what I liked is we kind of often I'm presented with this sort of hierarchical Jacob's ladder where you have to get to some end goal and we are climbing a ladder, and where we appear on that ladder may be, you know, higher or lower than other people. But this idea of as a wrestler, what he explained is that when you're facing your opponent, and there isn't malice, there isn't, you know, some kind of goal, but in Jacob's case, there is something that he wants, something that he feels that he can expect, something that he has to wrestle with himself and with ideas to progress. And the author had sort of explained that what you have to do in wrestling is lean and pull your opponent into you. And that as you are locked in this embrace with this struggle, that what that must take is something godly. For Jacob to have struggled physically for that amount of time all night long, and must have been drawing on something almost superhuman, because it would exhaust someone doing it for a matter of minutes. I love the idea that Community of Christ wrestle with ideas and lean into things that make them uncomfortable. And at times that can be painful and maybe exhausting, but it's not something that they shy away from. And I just find it really interesting that, you know, that while we're sort of thinking about the idea of wrestling with something, it sounds like quite a violent thing, to see it as artistry and beauty and growth and physicality. I just find it quite an interesting idea. So talk to me about Community of Christ and how formally looking at peace began.
So I think the early restoration movement was into peace. There's a story of Edward Partridge, who was first bishop of the church, and who's tarred and feathered in July 1833 on the square in Independence. But he was so meek and so Christian and so humble that it moved the mob. Only later we became violent and began to retaliate. There's a tension in the church, I think, between being Americans, for whom violence is the sacred act around 1776, and the gospel of Jesus. So peace and justice begin in the Garden of Eden. It's the shout of the prophets in their poetry and their street theatre and their protest against monarchy and against Pharaoh. And you find it embodied in the life and person of Jesus. So that's the prelude. One of the glorious things about Community of Christ is you can't be kicked out for heresy.
Yeah.
Now, ministers are supposed to preach and teach the public theology of the church. So I try to do that, certainly when in my preaching. In a class, there's more to and fro, so you can be freer, I think. But it's a glorious thing that you can't be kicked out for your ideas. You can be censored for unchristian conduct. It's not that anything goes. We have to love one another and help each other love one another. But in terms of wrestling with ideas, it's open. And sometimes people you disagree with most in the church can become very dear friends.
Right. I mean, I love the idea of a faith tradition that, I guess, you know, we've been on such a journey with 21st Century Saints and the rest of the Brit Avengers that activism and protest is part of our spiritual language. It's part of our worship. It's how we interact with each other and with the divine. What about, talk to me a little bit about the temple, about prayers for peace, and about the tradition of peace colloquy. Ryan, do you maybe want to lead us into that?
Yeah, I certainly can try. My understanding of the temple in Community of Christ tradition, and Andrew can correct anything or add to anything that I say that's incomplete, is one of the things that I found most striking when I was first exploring Community of Christ. A very different, to me, seemed a very different understanding of the purpose of temples from what I was used to. The temple in Independence, the revelation in Community of Christ that leads to that being constructed, specifically talks about it in terms of peace, of being a house of peace and a center for peace. And I think there are precedents to that idea in the early Restoration movement. Certainly the idea of a place that is open for and welcoming rather than exclusive having limits on people who are able to come. The temple is a sort of focal point. Every day, another tradition in Community of Christ is that every day there is a service of prayer for peace. those prayers are written by members of the church, sort of lay members, ordinary people who can send them in, submit them. Each day, the prayer is focused on a different nation of the world, so that over the course of a year, every nation and tongue and people, to kind of use scriptural language, has time set aside that focuses on them and on their needs and holds them up. The sort of liturgy around it, if you like, also has a sort of twofold focus. On the one hand, the temple and I think sacred spaces in general are a place for finding personal peace, and for sort of setting aside the businesses and distractions of everyday life. But I think if they're fulfilling their function properly, they also point you outwards, so that there's a kind of gathering, a coming inwards, and then also seeing yourself as being in a sense commissioned to then go out and build peace in the world around you. And both of those elements are present in the prayer services.
Andrew.
So it's interesting to talk about sacred space, sacred geography. So some people talk about sacred space as a thin place where it's easier to sense the Spirit of God. So campgrounds at Dunfield House are such a thin place, as the temple in Kirtland is, and also as the temple in Independence, as sacraments are as well, baptism, laying on of hands for the sick, marriage, and so on. There's 10 places. So that's the first thing to say about sacred space. I think it's interesting what Jesus said when he turned over the tables in the temple in rebuke and reform. He said it's meant to be a house of prayer for all people. So if you're praying together and you're from all nations, how can you be at war with one another? So that's, again, a sacred space. And then Isaiah talks about Isaiah chapter 2, which is repeated in the Book of Mormon, is that the house of the Lord should inspire all nations to come and beat swords into plowshares, spears into pruning hooks, and learn war no more. So the temple in Isaiah theology is also about peace with justice. Isaiah has lots to say about justice for the poor as well. And so Isaiah is on a roll in his early chapters. You have that passage of beating swords into plowshares. You have Jesus, you have the Messiah called the Prince of Peace. And then you have this in Isaiah 11, you have this, the passage of the coming of the Messiah, and then lion and lamb, or wolf and lamb, and a little child leading them. And I think we want a Zion that's good for every little child in the world, black, brown, or white, whatever their race, whatever their mother tongue. It's a world safe for all children.
I got to, just earlier on, for the first time, I got to watch the Prayer for Peace, which was on YouTube, from the temple. And like I say, the first time I got to actually experience this after all this time, because I think I still kind of feel a sense of I should be worthy to enter a temple. The fact that the temple is open to all is a very, very powerful thing. And how it is used to pray for peace is incredible. Talk to me a little bit then how we get from the temple is this symbol for peace that's open, that's being invitations and calls to go into the world to build peace. Talk to me a little bit about the peace colloquy that we're going to see happen here. So this is the third one, is that right? And it's in March 15th to 17th of this year. Talk to me a little bit about what its purpose is, what you hope to achieve by it, and what it's going to look like.
So I'll let Ryan talk about the upcoming piece, Color Crafting. I think Ryan's chair of the committee organizing.
Oh, okay, wonderful.
Yes, so the Community of Christ has a long tradition of peace colloquies, which began in centrally in independence, I believe, in the US. But since then has been replicated at regional levels throughout the world. So in 2020, we had the first British Isles and Western Europe peace colloquy, which is held at Dunfield House in Herefordshire in the UK, which is a really beautiful, speaking of sacred space, that's a place that Community of Christ has sort of used as a gathering ground and a sort of retreat centre for many decades. I think the aim of a peace colloquy, so a colloquy is a conversation, and the aim is to bring together members and friends of Community of Christ for a weekend of conversation and fellowship and learning. So people who are attending that weekend, in general, are people who already see peace and justice as things that are valuable and worth pursuing. But what we're trying to do is to empower and equip them with knowledge and skills to implement the values that they already hold. So what we're trying to do is we have brought together a really fantastic array of people who have personal experience or professional experience or specialist knowledge of a range of issues connected to peace and justice that we think are both relevant to the sort of current moment in history in the British Isles and in Europe, and that people who are attending will benefit from learning more about and learning practical ways that they can pursue these things in their life. So we had a committee who are sort of planning it, made up primarily of young adults, from including both people from continental Europe and from the UK. And in our initial kind of conversations about what we felt would be the right focus for this particular colloquy, the one that we're having next month, there was a really strong feeling that, sort of circling back to what we were saying at the beginning about the meaning of peace, that this should be something quite multidimensional. So we have three sort of strands running through, which are environmental peace and justice, social peace and justice, and personal peace and justice. And the kind of theme or tagline is piece by piece. So it's perhaps a little bit corny, but we quite like it. I'll just give you a few sort of highlights of what we're doing. We have a keynote for the whole weekend on the Saturday morning by a climate and poverty activist about the importance of not being a bystander to some of the things that we're sort of witnessing in the world today. And then the rest of the weekend is divided into three sort of segments. So we have an environmental segment where Tracy Martin from the Quaker Council of European Affairs is giving a talk on justice and peace in a time of climate crisis. You know, what does the present sort of environmental catastrophe, what implications does that have for people who are concerned about peace and justice? and then breaking out into different workshops, exploring a range of different issues around that. The question of sort of activism, what does environmental protest look like and advocacy? What are the realities and the ethics of environmental protest? Learning more about climate change and environmental hazards. And also we have a theologian and biblical scholar coming who's going to be leading a workshop on environmental ethics and the Bible. And then in the afternoon, that's a similar sort of format is followed, but focusing on societal peace and justice. So exploring issues like unconscious bias, racial justice, gender identity, refugees and social cohesion. And then on the Sunday morning, we have more of a personal focus. So we have experts and specialists leading workshops and giving talks on issues such as how to find personal peace, sort of the psychology of happiness, healthy lifestyles, financial security, and peace within families and relationships. I should add, sort of interspersed between all of this, there's some fun stuff as well. It's not all just sort of sitting and learning. So we have activities and opportunities for free time and fellowship and exploring the grounds of Dunfield. It's in a really beautiful part of the countryside.
Yeah, and then, the venue's gorgeous. Yeah.
And then the sort of weekend finishes with a ceremony in which we give the Community of Christ European Peace Award. So the discernment process for this, I think, actually exemplifies quite well the principle of common consent in Community of Christ, and more broadly the idea of inspiration being something that comes from below as well as from above. So we sent out nomination forms to church members requesting nominations for people that they felt would be appropriate recipients for the Peace Award. We had a list of criteria that had sort of been agreed upon as to the kind of personal group that we were looking to uphold, and the suggestion that we received, that we got several suggestions. The one that we eventually agreed upon was one that was suggested from someone outside of the planning committee, but it's being accepted by an organization called Nadia, who are a organization in the based mainly in the UK that support mainly Ukrainian refugees with sort of medium to long term support for when they're settling in the UK, and helps to support them with navigating all of the difficulties around kind of long term housing solutions and finding employment and gaining the skills that they need to have a bright future. So then that's a little bit of a summary of the weekend, what we're trying to do and what's happening.
I to be completely honest, and normally, things like this occur and it sounds like, oh, well, at least it'd be a good chance to catch up with my mates. This, every single thing you're talking about lights me up. This is what faith is for me. I feel completely inspired by the fact that this is happening here in the UK too. Andrew, there's a quote I want to read out that's that I just thought was wonderful as well as we're as sort of you're thinking about preparing for the peace colloquy, and it was John A. Widso, I can never pronounce his name. There's a T in there somewhere, and my mouth just will not accept it. But anyway, he once wrote that the struggle for reconciliation between contending forces is not an easy one. It cuts deep into the soul and usually leaves scars that ache while life endures. And I think that's a wonderful way to sort of think about what's happening as we're discussing peace, because you're talking about poverty, you're talking about things that are that cause so much lived pain just now, that the people who are engaging with it, we have to deal with our anger, with our ego, with our personalities, with apathy, with just being tired. And of course, you know, as you fight for justice as well as peace, there are real people who are on, you know, who are experiencing that. This isn't just about ideologies, these are about the people who are affected. Andrew, talk to me a little bit about what you hope to achieve from the peace colloquy.
So I want to say Jesus was a rabbi, a teacher. I love the fact that Ryan is actually a rabbi. and will be.
Figuratively, just to clarify for people, I'm not.
So the first peace colloquy was the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus called people to discipleship, to be learners. Disciple means student. So what we're doing is imitating Jesus in having a peace colloquy, a gathering to learn about peacemaking, the kingdom of God and its full peace and justice on earth as it is in heaven, like we pray in the Lord's Prayer. The Lord's Prayer is Zion grounded. So I hope that people will be inspired, encouraged by the support of each other, and will sense also the presence of Jesus calling them in a deeper way to make the world a better place, to make the world Zion on earth.
Beautifully put. Well, we're going to wrap up tonight. Thank you so much to Ryan and Andrew for your time. If you have been inspired, as I have, about the Peace Colloquy, it is coming up in a few weeks. And there is still time to book if you want to come and join them. Now, if you would like to, you can have a look in the show notes. We do have a link to where you can sign up. There is a form there and a schedule that you can take a look at and get that back to Ryan, who's organizing it. If you want to reach out to us here at the podcast, we'll put all of the information on the show notes, all of the links. So any questions that you have at all, and even if it's about more than the peace colloquy, even if you want to, you know, ask these two wonderful human beings anything about where they're at or what they're doing, if you want to reach out to them, I'm sure they would love to hear from you, and we can absolutely put you in touch. So of course, you know how to find us, 21stcenturysaints.org, on our social media channels, and we can put you all in touch. So we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear from you, especially if you decide you're going to go and check out the Peace Colloquy at Dunfield in a couple of weeks. It's a fantastic way to prepare for the run-up to Easter, to actually be looking at activism and action and how we can get our teeth stuck in, instead of passively accepting what life is telling us it should look like and we should be quiet and obedient. We have excellent role models here about how we can make a real difference and enter into dialogues to help others make that difference too. Building peace, as Ryan pointed out. So thank you so much for being with us. We will be back with you again really soon, and you'll have a good night. You know where we are if you need us.